Okay. Hello, world. My name is Don, and you're watching Showcase for the week ending Sunday, June 26, 2022. Stop the presses. This is our Sunday show. And once again, that means weird headlines and your live chat comments. Thanks so much for joining me tonight. Don't forget to hit that like button and subscription bell down below. And as always, if you're with me live, feel free to drop a line in the live chat and I might read it off on the air. Now, before we begin, there's one minor piece of housekeeping here. First of all, if we come across news stories tonight that have embedded YouTube videos, bear with us. They're going to be a little bit muted there. We may have audio difficulties there. There's still a lot of sea changing that we're kind of like in the process of doing because we're coming up with this big soft rebrand coming up on this coming weekend when we're unleashing the website that we've been spending the last few months building. And we're still really excited to unleash that into the public and actually like show y'all what we've been working on so diligently in the background. But we may have difficulties with the audio tonight with some of the stuff that we're going to be showing theoretically. So if that happens, when we post the clips, little montage clips over the course of the week, like we've been doing the last few weeks, we'll be including the main audio there at the absolute least, because we can just edit that in after the fact. But we may just have difficulties with live in the process tonight. That's the only reason I'm bringing that up tonight. And I think that's basically it. I already mentioned the thing on this coming weekend. July 1st is when we're going to be releasing the website out to the public. So we're really excited about that. Anyway, that's all the major announcements tonight. Once again, thanks so much for watching. We're here to do weird news tonight. So let's go ahead and get started. First item on the docket tonight, we have a topic from UPI, baby goat born with 19-inch ears in Pakistan. You didn't need the feather to fly, you had it in you all along. I don't know how else to really react to that offhand, but let's click through and take a closer look, I suppose. This was posted 5 days ago on UPI. A Pakistani goat farm owner said a recently born baby might be a new world record after her ears were measured at nearly 19 inches. Mohammed Hassan Narejo of the Narejo Goat Farm in Sindh, I profusely apologize if I'm pronouncing any of that wrong, I'm trying here, said the baby goat named Simba, nice, was born June 5, and Narejo immediately noticed her unusually long ears, which drag on the ground when the animal walks. Yeah, I bet so. Goodness gracious. Narejo said Simba is a Nubian goat, a breed known for their long ears, but her ears are long even by Nubian standards, possibly owing to a genetic mutation. I'm sure Charles Xavier would have something to say about this. The farmer said Simba is in good health, and he believes she could end up as a Guinness World Record holder when she reaches her full size. There's the goat in question. There is a YouTube video here. I'm not sure if we're going to get audio here, but I'll try and play it here. All else fails, we'll be including this, the full video in the clip of this segment that we may be releasing later in the week. Moving right along here. Next item on the docket, this is again from UPI. Oregon man breaks world record for alphabetizing soup. This is a thing? This is a thing now? We're gonna alphabetize our alphabet soup. Okay. We are literally playing with our food, all right? This was posted on UPI 3 days ago, June 23, 2022. An Oregon man broke an unusual Guinness World Record when he found and alphabetized all 26 letters in a can of alphabet soup in 2 minutes and 8.6 seconds. Wait a minute, broke a Guinness World Record. That means somebody else already did this and set a record previously. Somebody already thought to do this. Jacob Chandler said he decided to try to break a Guinness World Record and look through some possibilities before reading about the alphabet soup record. Chandler told Guinness World Records, quote, I was intrigued by the idea of alphabetizing a can of soup. I've eaten plenty of alphabet soup in my life, but never stopped to think someone would make a challenge out of organizing the letters, end quote. This is one of those things that, of course, this is the sort of thing that you would go after if you're really like this set upon entering the Guinness World Records thing for something. What's the easiest thing you can possibly sort of pick out from a Guinness World Records book to sort of like immortalize yourself, at least until somebody else comes along and breaks your record anyway? But it's like, this naturally would be one of those records that like nobody would think to do, is just alphabetize a can of soup. Why not? Chandler said he made preparations, including finding the perfect size bowl and spoon. Oh, of course, because that's a factor. Identifying the right kind of alphabet soup with large and easily recognizable letters. Well, that makes sense, to sort of like help shave off the time it takes to sort of determine the difference between an I and an L or something, right? And studying up to make sure he could tell the difference between letters like M and W. Yeah, that's another big one. Let's see. The most difficult part, quote, the most difficult part was not being able to know what was going to be in the can at the time of the attempt. Due to the fact each can was sealed and completely random, this made it mentally exhausting to think about. I felt I could put all this effort and time into this record, but if a letter was not in the can from the factory, then my record attempt would have been a failure, end quote. That actually is an interesting sort of perspective to put on this, because like usually when we hear about Guinness World Records that are being created or broken due to some like this passionate pursuit of self-immortalization, really, or just losing a bet or something, whatever is the catalyst for starting that process, we always hear about the success or failure of the attempt hinging on something that the person who's doing the record-breaking attempt in question is doing. This is one of those records that introduces an element of chance that is completely outside the person's locus of control, like the person's ability to really influence or measure. Like whatever you get in the can, you get, which then sort of begs the question, did he bring his own can to the attempt that had to be done in front of a Guinness representative, or did the Guinness person bring their can? You know, what brand did they get? Like what brands are more conducive to having the letter size large enough to do this? I don't know. That last part opens up a few more little interesting sort of wrinkles into the process of going for a record like that. But there you go. Oh, shoot. I'm just realizing I exited it just a split second too soon. I forgot to go down all the way to see if it went through. Oh, he did go through. Sorry. I read that in the beginning. I just forgot it already. Oregon man breaks world record for alphabetizing soup. So he did succeed. Congratulations. Let's move on. Next item on the docket, moving right along here. Okay, so this is from The Verge. This looks like entertainment news. And I think I know what this is about. So Chris Pratt, AKA Star-Lord, says his Mario voice is unlike anything you've heard. Okay. So let's see. Pratt said in an interview with Variety, talking about the upcoming Super Mario movie, quote, I worked really closely with the directors in trying out a few things and landed on something that I'm really proud of and can't wait for people to see and hear. It's an animated voiceover narrative. It's not a live action movie. I'm not going to be wearing a plumber suit running all over. I'm providing a voice for an animated character, and it is updated and unlike anything you've heard in the Mario world before. End quote. So given that we've only ever heard one thing in the Mario world, if you want to call it that, that's associated with this character of Super Mario, which pretty much only boils down to the voice of Charles Martinet, who, for those who don't know, has been the voice of Mario in those Nintendo games for, God, since at the very latest, 96. I think there's a couple of projects that predate that, but the biggest voiceover thing that he did of consequence was as that character was in Super Mario 64, which came out in tail end of 96 when the Nintendo 64 console was released. But if we're just completely doing a 180 from that, and I did read some reports about this movie, and Charles is involved in a surprise cameo capacity, basically. He's not doing the Mario voice at all. This is purely Chris that we're going to be getting in that role. I don't know about this. Like, I'm very apprehensive about the idea of propositioning this idea of this iconic character with a voice that is unlike anything that we've heard. That can easily go one of two ways. Like, this actually makes me more nervous for this movie, if I'm being brutally honest. I mean, this is a Comcast film that's being done by, or Universal, I should say, that's being handled by Illumination, which is the studio most famous for the Despicable Me movies and the Sing movies, The Secret Life of Pets, a couple other movies. I think those are the only ones that studio has put out that have actually made sequels. Despicable Me and Secret Life of Pets and Sing. I know there's a new Minions movie that's either just come out or is about to come out. I think it just came out. So I know that they're hard at work on polishing this off, which was originally, this Mario movie was originally supposed to come out at the tail end of this year, but they kicked the ball down the field several months. Not sure if they're sort of like borrowing a page from the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Let's see here. One moment. A couple things I have to handle here really quickly. Don't know why in the world. Goodness gracious, that was weird. Anyway, sorry. So I'm really kind of like I'm looking forward to the Super Mario movie. I'm not looking forward to this voice. I'm not looking forward to the trailer that gets put out because I'm really nervous about this. I like the guy's movies. I like Chris's movies, but and I have heard some positive things about Jurassic World Dominion, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see how that goes, I suppose. Anyway, let's move on. We have some comments here. What the heck? Rip Nick Cage? Can't believe the news. What? What? Wait a minute. Hang on one second. Let me take a look at this here. Let me do something really quickly here and Google that really quickly. There's I don't know why. No, nothing else there. Sorry, I'm actually in the process of actively looking up right now whether or not Nicolas Cage is still alive. Somebody just posted what looks like a death hoax in our live chat just now. I don't see anything else in there in the Google News traffic feed for that. So hopefully that's not true. I mean, from what I understand, having massive talent is an unbearable weight, but goodness, I hope that nobody's okay. So this is from Ms. D, breaking a record with Alphabet Soup. Wow, somebody might need to get a life. Yeah, that's certainly one plausible reaction to that, I gotta say. But hey, he did it. So there's your little immortalization right there. If you can do it, then I guess more power to you, I suppose. Anyway, let's move on to the next item on the docket here, which is coming out of the Associated Press. Ohio State gets approval to trademark the for merchandise. The article, the word the, which is something, I've actually heard something about this near tail end of last week. I don't remember exactly where, but apparently this is either the source or close to the source. This is actually the AP. So this is out of Columbus, Ohio, naturally, right? Ohio State University has won its fight to trademark the word the. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office approved the university's request Tuesday. The school says it allows Ohio State to control use of the on branded products associated with and sold through athletics and collegiate channels, such as t-shirts, baseball caps, and hats. Okay. Let's see. Ben Johnson, the university's senior director of media and public relations, says, quote, "The has been a rallying cry in the Ohio State community for many years, and Buckeye fans who purchase official Ohio State gear support student scholarships, libraries, and other university initiatives," end quote. He noted the university's licensing and trademark program generates over $12.5 million a year in revenue, which helps fund student scholarships and university programs. Okay. My first reaction to this is like, could this possibly also pave the way to lower tuition costs? Maybe like having scholarship programs, that's fantastic, but like not everybody necessarily qualifies for scholarships, you know, dealing with the root of the problem at its source seems like a more efficient use of capital. If you're going to go ahead and own a very sort of like a linchpin of our entire language, basically, which is the word the. Like, you try and say, you'd be hard pressed to find, like, just go an entire day. Go have a 10-minute conversation with anybody without using the word the. Like, that's how important that word is. And here we have a university that, a public university at that, Ohio State, that, if I'm not mistaken, that is a public university. Anything that's like the state in the name, like, I'm pretty sure that's a public university. Why are we owning that? You know, and I don't know. Ohio State started pursuing a trademark in August 2019 after fashion retailer Marc Jacobs. Oh, good grief. Hang on a second. Here we go. Sorry about that. Had to fix a couple of things here in the live chat. Okay, so Ohio State started pursuing a trademark in August 2019 after fashion retailer Marc Jacobs had filed an application for the word a few months earlier. The company and the university reached a deal in August 2021 that allows both parties to use the branding. The patent office rejected Ohio State's initial application, finding the trademark appeared to be used for merely decorative manner, gotta agree, sorry, and as an ornamental feature that didn't appear to function as a trademark that would differentiate the items from others. Yeah, I've dealt with the patent, the trademark and copyright system a little bit previously, and it's Yeah, you got to be real clear and specific about not just what you're going after, but why you're trying to pursue that trademark. It's one of those things that's really like, it really surprises me that they really went as far as they did here and actually doing this. But I guess somehow they found a way to make it happen. Apparently, Ohio State University owns the as a trademark. Hopefully they're able to do the right thing with that above and beyond scholarships and making the students' financial burdens a little bit easier. I know that's a rather big deal right now. But anyway, that's I guess we'll tentatively sort of write that consider that as a positive piece of news, tentatively, depending on what Ohio State, excuse me, what the Ohio State chooses to do with that next. Anyway, let's move on. Next item on the docket. Let's see here. Come on, come on, come on. Come on. This browser is being a bit of a pain right now. Come on, let's go. Thank you. All right, next item. So this is from Huffington Post. NASA wants its moon dust and cockroaches back now. Okay. Let's take a look. So again, this is from Huffington Post, first published 3 days ago. The space agency wants to halt the sale of moon dust collected in 1969 that was later fed to cockroaches to determine if the lunar rock posed a threat to terrestrial life. Why though? Like, why would NASA, like, if you're all right, if you have collected a sample of, we're just going to call it extraterrestrial material because that's by definition what it is. It's not from terra firma. It's not from Earth. Moon dust is not from Earth. So, natively. So, why would you sort of do that sort of test to determine, like, I don't know. I don't understand like the sense in sort of that kind of a testing process. And if you were going to do that, why would you test it on insects? On cockroaches in particular, I don't get that. Let's see. The space agency has asked Boston-based RR Auction to halt the sale of moon dust collected during the 1969 Apollo 11 mission that had subsequently been fed to cockroaches during an experiment to determine if the lunar rock contained any sort of pathogen that posed a threat to terrestrial life. But again, if the sample was collected and like sealed for like, you know, and you have the right sort of equipment and environmental isolation for the sample to manipulate it how you want, why would you feel the need to do that kind of testing? I'm not sure about that. But then I'm far from a NASA expert. I'm sure there's people out there that can answer that question better than I. The material, a NASA lawyer said in a letter to the auctioneer, still belongs to the federal government. The material from the experiment, including a vial with about 40 milligrams of moon dust and three cockroach carcasses, it poses a threat. Why did they hold on to it? It killed the cockroaches. Nothing kills cockroaches. I thought we had basically established this. There are three things that will always survive anything: cockroaches, Twinkies, and Keith Richards. Those three things we've established. It's a firmly and widely known fact that those three things will survive anything. Like it should have been a given. Like what? They died? They found something that kills cockroaches? Like that? Holy crap. Was expected to sell for at least $400,000, but has been pulled from the auction block. Wow. In another letter dated June 22nd, NASA's lawyer asked RR Auction to work with the current owner of the material to return it to the federal government. Okay. The Apollo 11 mission brought more than 47 pounds of lunar rock back to Earth. Some was fed insects, fish, and other small creatures to see if it would kill them. Okay, this is going in a rather unfortunate and sad direction with regard to animal testing. So the cockroaches that were fed moon dust were brought to the University of Minnesota, where entomologist Marion Brooks dissected and studied them. Brooks, who died in 2007, told the Minneapolis Tribune for an October 1969 story that she found no evidence of infectious agents or that the moon material was toxic or caused any other ill effects in the insects, according to the article. But the moon rock and the cockroaches were never returned to NASA and were instead displayed at Brooks's home. Her daughter sold them in 2010, which is how they wound up at an auction. Okay. Yeah, I'm still sort of stuck on the fact that they went through all this crazy testing and like the cockroaches are part of the auction. that the moon dust samples wound up at. That's bizarre. That's a weird news piece right there, like for you for this weekend right there. Interesting. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and move on right now, but if you want to read more about this or any of the other news articles tonight, feel free to check out all the links are in the description down below at the bottom of this YouTube video, or in the audio podcast feed, which will be releasing the audio version of this episode later on in the week. Thanks again, those of you who are watching with us live right now on YouTube, or we're also live on Instagram at Weekend Showcase. Feel free to drop a comment in our live chat feed if you are a real person, and I might read it off on the air. So let's go ahead and move along. We have a few more topics to get to. We're coming up on 6:30 on the East Coast. Let's move on. Here we go. This is from The Mirror, which is another UK publication. Woman bemused after boarding plane and being told her seat no longer exists. No longer exists. This is like one of those, this reminds me of that thing we were talking about last week with the staircase in the forest that goes to nowhere. Okay, all of a sudden now we have airplane seats that are disappearing. This is like, this feels like a Netflix show, honestly. Like how you would have a hotel that doesn't have a 13th floor, it goes to 12 and then 14, because for like superstitious reasons. Like, what if airplanes, what if you have an airplane that deliberately sort of avoids a row 13, you know? Like, it just goes from 12 to 14 as you go back towards the plane for that same sort of reason. Anyway, let's take a look. Flying can be a stressful experience at the best of times, but one woman faced a more stressful experience than most recently when she allegedly boarded a plane and discovered her seat did not exist. The unlucky passenger made her way toward a row at the back of the plane before discovering they stopped one before the number she was supposed to be seated in. Sharing her stressful experience on TikTok, Daisy Barr wrote, quote, "When you're row 26, but row 26 doesn't exist anymore." Of course, row 26. 26 is 13 twice. 13 times 2 is 26. 26 is 26 divided by 2 is 13. It's numerology, people. It's clear as day. It's right in front of you. How is it not clear? Anyway. In the viral video, Daisy films a sign on the plane indicating there should be three seats in the row before panning across to an empty space where a woman sits on the floor. That's a safety hazard. On the other side of the aisle stand more women looking equally bemused. Yep. Wow. Daisy also claimed that neither herself nor the group she was traveling with were offered help. Yeesh. Thankfully, they were still able to make their journey. She commented, quote, "We obviously didn't stand up during the flight. We just went and found some empty seats and no one helped us. Luckily, there were some." End quote. A video shared on TikTok has racked up 1.2 million views in the day since it was posted, with several viewers shocked by the group's experience. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's one of those things that is, again, this really sort of strikes me as the sort of thing that could be easily a science fiction movie type of situation. I can't imagine like having to sit through an entire flight just on the floor in the corner because the seat that you paid your hard-earned ticket money for doesn't exist anymore. That's like, okay, call your travel agent and express irate anger, you know, as soon as the plane lands safely, because, you know, you always have to have your phone off, you know, it's like takeoff and landing process is like, yeah. Anyway, although depending on who you talk to, like there's that may be a bit of an urban legend, supposedly. I don't know. But if you talk to pilots, I remember there was this interview, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember exactly when this was. This was after the Miracle on the Hudson. Captain Sullenberger did an interview on TV one time, and the interviewer actually asked him point blank, "Hey, listen, the whole thing about turning your cell phone off when the plane is taking off or landing, there's nothing to that, right? That's not a thing that people actually really have to do. Y'all are just messing with us, aren't you?" And then Sully said, "No, that's real." So it's like, okay, you have to take the person's word for it, but it's like, I don't know. It still feels like one of those things from an, you know, idiot layperson, not a pilot. It just feels kind of more superfluous and unnecessary. But hey, all about airline safety. So let's see. Let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the docket. Once again, this and all of our topics tonight are listed in the description down below if you want to check out more information on anything that we've just been discussing tonight. Let's move on. See what else we have coming up on the lineup of topics tonight. Come on, load history. Here we go. What else do we have? I think we have three more. Yeah, we have three more here. Okay, three more topics. This is another one from UPI. Dog escapes from pet hotel, runs 2 miles to home in Kansas. I actually heard about this one. I didn't read anything into it, but or read anything about it, I should say. But this actually looks familiar. This was posted 3 days ago. A Kansas couple vacationing in Las Vegas said their dog escaped from a pet hotel and ran 2 miles to their home, where he triggered their doorbell camera. Jeremy Henson said he and his wife, Sarah, dropped off their dog, Dexter, at a Lenexa pet hotel before traveling to Las Vegas, where their phones informed them that their Ring doorbell camera had detected motion at the house. Henson said he and his wife were shocked to see the canine on camera. He told USA Today, quote, "We kept thinking it has to be another dog. Nope, that's definitely Dexter," end quote. Henson said Dexter had jumped a 6-foot fence and a 4-foot retainer fence, wow, to escape from the boarding facility and had run to the couple's home. Okay, get that parkour, I think is the proper response to that. That's I did not know that dogs were capable of that level of parkour. That's all I can think of for that. Like that's 10 feet right there. Or really like, all right. Yeah, so the retainer fence, depending on how that was done. So you have the 6-foot fence and the 4-foot fence right on the other side, or is it like the retainer fence and then the 6-foot is built on top of that? Like, how was that? What did he jump on top of to provide leverage to jump over that much? And then, goodness, like this animal's giving cats a run for their money, because obviously cats have more reputation for landing on their feet from ungodly heights and all that sort of thing. So that's bizarre. Anyway, let's see here. The couple contacted the pet hotel, which sent a van to the home. They said Dexter ran right up to the vehicle and jumped inside. Wow. That's a special level of homesickness for your dog, for your pet to be at a pet hotel and just say, you know what? Forget this. I want to go home, and I want to go home now. I don't care that I'm supposed to be here. I don't care that my owners aren't home. I want to go home now. So apparently he did it. And actually, there's a YouTube video attached to this. Luckily, there's no real audio necessary for this. I'm just curious to see like the footage from this. Let's see. I'm going to have to zoom ahead a little bit here in the timeline. Here we go. Yep, that's Dexter there on the lower right corner.
Dexter the dog is ringing the doorbell.
Wow.
But no one is answering.
Wow, that is crazy.
And Sarah Henson are 1,000 miles away.
Okay, so yeah, I guess it's I guess it's possible for that to happen. I guess it's possible for dogs to do that sort of thing. Hey, what's the craziest dog story that you have to share? Maybe like put it in the live chat and I might read it off, or in the comments down below. This is from Desert Kingdom. Poor pup. Yeah, serious homesickness. Indeed. Shoot. Anyway, let's move on to the next topic. Next item on the docket here. We have two more to go. This is from UPI. Swedish man throws washing machine more than 14 feet. Wow. Okay. This is 4 days ago. Wow. Okay. How do you practice this? Under what conditions would it occur to you? Hey, you know what would be a cool idea to do? Since I'm already good at doing this regularly, let me actually try to be literally the best in the world at this. Throwing a washing machine. Like, this actually beats the alphabet soup thing. As why in the world would... Okay, so Johan Espenkrona, I think is how you pronounce this name, broke the world record while going head-to-head with Dutch strongman Kelvin De Ruyter on the set of Guinness World Records' Lo Show de Record. In Milan, the bodybuilders took turns throwing washing machines in an attempt to break the record of 13 feet and 6.6 inches, which was set by Lithuanian man, Zydrunas Savickas. I am so sorry. I can't pronounce some of this stuff sometimes. De Ruyter initially broke the record with a 14-foot, 1-inch throw, but Espenkrona ultimately took the title by throwing his washing machine 14 feet and 7.2 inches, more than 14 and a half feet. Okay, I want to see this. Okay, anyway, this is crazy what's happening here. This is the strongman competition. and I'm looking at somebody. I'm looking at this guy throwing a, being given the all clear by the Guinness record to throw this washing machine. It's up above his head. Just a straight chuck, just a straight over the head chuck. That thing is not going to be handling unmentionables or anything ever again, it looks like. What I'm curious about is if there were ever any attempts to do this record that the washing machine actually was still able to work afterwards, because that would be an amazing Maytag commercial. Like, can you imagine a Maytag commercial or like one other or another sort of like washing machine brand advertising it by like, hey, the world's strongest men can throw this around, right? And it still works, you know, with high efficiency. I might actually buy one of those. Would not buy that though. That's that washing machine has definitely seen better days. That is crazy though. Putting like your whole body into the transfer of potential to kinetic energy for 14.7 feet. That's crazy. All right, congratulations on setting that world record. Goodness gracious, I can't imagine ever doing anything like that, but man, I know who I'm calling for help moving. Definitely gonna be way easy to move a couch or at the very least a washing machine. Anyway, let's move on. We have one more topic on the docket tonight before we shut this thing down. It's 6:37 on the East Coast right now. Let's move on. All right, last one. This is from The Verge. Amazon shows off Alexa feature that mimics the voices of your dead relatives. Amazon says it can clone voices from 1 minute, from a minute of audio. Wow. You know what? This is like the third week in a row where there's been something undeniably brain-poppingly creepy in the weird news headlines that I've had difficulty trying to wrap my mind around, quite frankly. This is crazy. Okay. This was posted in The Verge 3 days ago. Wow. Okay. Amazon has revealed an experimental Alexa feature that allows the AI assistant to mimic the voices of users' dead relatives. The company demoed the feature at its annual Mars conference, showing a video in which a child asks Alexa to read a bedtime story in the voice of his dead grandmother. Wow. As you saw in this experience, instead of Alexa's voice reading the book, it's the kid's grandma's voice, said Rohit Prasad, Amazon's head scientist for Alexa AI. Prasad introduced the clip by saying that adding human attributes to AI systems was increasingly important in these times of the ongoing pandemic when so many of us have lost someone we love. While AI can't eliminate that pain of loss, it can definitely make their memories last, said Prasad. Okay. I hear where they're coming from in terms of wanting to use this artificial intelligence system that Amazon has developed in a way that can sort of that can sort of help ease the pain of that loss, given the times that we're in right now. But I don't, like, on the surface, I get it. But I'm sorry, I draw the line at like, the person is, it's a beloved family member, I understand that. And the family is grieving, I get that, I understand that. But it's like, at what point is the family able to really sort of like move on from the pain of that loss? If this person is always gonna be there in a more literal sense than what otherwise would be possible without Alexa. Why would you do that? And furthermore, why would you sort of subject a child, let's say, you know, to this simulation as though the grandparent is still there? I mean, don't we have like, we have videotapes for this? Some people will make the argument of like, we have audio, we have recordings, we have video recordings, we have audio recordings, and especially in the age of social media, you know, we have other ways to sort of like, carry the person's memory around, you know, and carry them with you, you know. I get that. But this is different though. This is a real-time engagement with something in the present tense, as opposed to reliving a cherished memory with your dearly departed family member or friend, whatever the case may be. I don't know. I don't like the idea of doing this where it's like they're still active, you know. It's there's a point where it sort of hinges on creepy, You know, this is not a simple recording. This is generating new content, emulating this person's voice, accent, dialect, you know, tone, cadence, breathing patterns, you know, in real time with new content, with new information that they're responding to or reciting, like reading a book. And like on an emotional level, on a developmental level, what does that do to a child that is exposed to this technology? You know, what does this do to the child's perception of life and death? You know, there are larger conversations that are to be had here. There's a YouTube video attached to this. I'm not going to play this back, but the video, the link to the story is in the description down below. Ms. D in the comment section on YouTube, what? No. Desert Kingdom says, thinking face emoji, just no. Yeah, I gotta agree. This is really a disturbing topic. There's just no other way to put it, quite frankly. Amazon has given no indication whether this feature will ever be made public, but says its systems can learn to imitate someone's voice from just a single minute of recorded audio. In an age of abundant videos and voice notes, this means it's well within the average consumer's reach to clone the voices of loved ones or anyone else they like. Yeah, this is, these imitations are often known as audio deepfakes and are already regularly used in industries like podcasting, film and TV, and video games. Yeah, no, just no to this. Don't make it easier for bad actors to fraudulently pose as somebody who's not even alive anymore to defend the fact that their identity is being compromised or outright stolen. You know, like the weaponization potentiality for this technology is clear. Why are we doing this? This feels like one of those scientific advancements that it's like, this feels like it does more danger than good. And I hesitate to sort of invoke Jurassic Park, but it's like, their engineers were spending so much time and energy focusing on whether or not they could. Clearly, nobody ever really stopped to think if they should. Because if they did sort of do the math properly on that, given the technological and social and political and cultural climate that we're in right now, somebody should have, you know, thrown a yellow flag on the field and been like, hey, we shouldn't do this. AI is great, but this particular application, maybe we shouldn't do this. I don't know. Brainspaz says, I would not want to hear a dead person's voice speaking to me. No thanks. Geez. And a Desert Kingdom says, creepy. Yeah, definitely agree with both of y'all on that. 100%. This is messed up. Anyway, that's Amazon showing off an Alexa feature that mimics the voices of your dead relatives. Again, this feature has not been made public yet, but man, this is creepy. It seems to be really unnerving some of our audience here tonight. What do you think about it? Those of you at home watching this, is this something that you would want in your home? Like, do you have family or friends that you would want to basically inhabit your smart home tech indefinitely? Would you be okay with this being used against yourself, you know, in terms of the risk? Because that's what that means. This technology existing and being released to the public means that all it takes is a minute of your audio, 1 minute. 1 minute of you talking, saying basically anything. Like there's a famous scene in the third Mission Impossible film where Tom Cruise is basically trying to mimic Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's cornered in a bathroom, right? And he's pinned down. Philip Seymour Hoffman is pinned down, and Cruise as Philip Seymour Hoffman has this little index card with a specific phrase that like he has to sort of like, it's gunned to his head, and he's being forced to read off this card so that the little voice strip thing that the IMF agents use to mimic voices are able to sort of do it accurately. The system has to read the person saying this specific passphrase, the specific key phrase to match the tone and inflection patterns and stuff like that synthetically. And it's like, do we even need that anymore? Since it seems like all it needs is any given 1 minute of audio, not even a specific phrase anymore. That movie I just referenced, that was 2006. We're halfway through 2022. And this is being done in smart homes. This is about to be done in smart homes in the real world. This is not a movie. Do not adjust your televisions, people. I mean, holy crap. This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. Anyway, let's wrap this up. Hang on 1 second. There we are. Sorry, I'm having to do a little bit of cleanup here on my live chat here. Anyway, that's all that we have for this particular lineup of weird news topics tonight. This was really crazy. I don't really know how else to describe it because we saw a lot of crazy stuff this week. We saw a couple of Guinness World Records. We saw some really creepy usages of artificial intelligence technology, some of which we've been seeing in increasingly like creepy frequency and applications in the news in recent weeks. And apparently that's just not stopping anytime soon, really. So I don't know where all this is going from here. And I want to be optimistic about the future, quite frankly, but it's, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, it feels like we're sort of like between Amazon and what was the other one? Apple with Siri. I don't know. But Amazon in particular, Alexa is kind of being extra. I will say, though, my favorite topic from this week was probably the dog running home to Kansas, because it's like, when I say favorite, I don't mean to say that that's the best one. That's obviously not a positive one. That's obviously sad. It's just the most sort of like unexpected. I would never have expected something like this to have happened. You know, I really honestly wouldn't. Like it's crazy. So I'm going to put that as what I think is the craziest story for this week. Obviously not the best story from the week, but I would put that in the sort of most, like, it threw me off this week. But that's basically what I have for this week. What were your favorite topics from this week? Feel free to drop a comment down below to continue the conversation. And feel free to visit any of our social media pages. We're at Weekend Showcase pretty much everywhere. And we will see you right here this coming Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 5:30 Pacific for another new trailer reaction show. I hope to see you then. For now, I'm Don Shannon. Be safe. And I hope you had a great weekend. Showcase you later. Thanks for watching. Good night.